He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And the car world goes on. Jay is going to give us a report. I'm going to turn this over to him right away because I think he was down at a very interesting car concourse this weekend. Go ahead, Jay. What'd you see?
So, yes, I was invited to go down to the Greenwich Concourse. And I didn't know, I mean, I knew of it. Everybody in the car world knows of it. Classic car show that takes place in Greenwich every year. It did not happen last year because of COVID. It has been going on for, I think it was the 20th or 25th year, so it's been going on for a while. And I was very pleasantly surprised. I mean, we are lucky enough here in our tri-state area to be right next to Lime Rock Park, and we have numerous opportunities to see both recent and vintage cars at Lime Rock. And there's also another big event here in Connecticut, the Dream Ride event in Farmington every summer that I've been to once. This is a little different. A very select group of different cars. Cars are being judged all morning long on Sunday morning. This is a four-day event. I only went on Sunday. And there were a bunch of different categories of cars. Of course, American muscle cars. There was a group of Allards. There was old SUVs ranking from older Range Rovers, original Ford Broncos, Lamborghini LM2s, if anybody remembers that from the, I don't know if it was the 80s or 90s, Lamborghini put a V12 engine in, like basically a Lamborghini Countach engine in an SUV, and it was a monster. And it was interesting.
Indeed it was.
Also, go ahead, Robin.
No, indeed it was. That's all. Keep going.
And there was another subcategory that I was introduced to. The person who invited me there had a car in that show. Is a whole bunch of Lancias. And there was a older cars, but also cars that that I remembered from my youth, and not to date myself. There was a Lancia Stratus, and also a crazy. If anybody was into rally racing back in the 80s and 90s, this was in the 80s. There was the infamous Group B, ultra powerful, purposely built cars. And there was a Lancia Delta S4 rally car. It was amazing. It was the whole show was amazing. It's very public friendly. You park not very far from the park where the event takes place. It's right off of I-95. It's right down Main Street in Greenwich for anybody who knows the area. And I'm certainly going to go back next year.
I have a question: is it invitational or can anyone go?
Anybody can go.
Okay.
Anybody can go.
And
I just happened to be invited by somebody who was going, but anybody can go.
Right. Jay, and for our listeners, it was basically older cars exclusively as opposed to a whole mix.
Not exclusively. There were modern cars. Anybody familiar with the racing world and the more modern car world, Jim Glickenhaus, who has made a reputation for himself by starting with a large fortune and investing in different cars, a few years ago developed his own version of a Ferrari, took a modern Ferrari, rebuilt the bodywork, and that was pretty much his first car. But he's got his own, not even supercar, what we call hypercars, that was present there. He's got a crazy SUV that was there too, the racing car that he built to go to Le Mans, which is a hybrid prototype car, was there as well, and they even started the car. So there is a modern side to it. Miller Motor Cars, anybody in the high end car world knows Miller Motor Cars. They are a huge dealer down in that neck of the woods, selling anything from Rolls Royce, Bugattis, Bentleys, and all those cars were there were one or two versions of pretty much any one of those hypercars or supercars. There were brand new McLarens. There were I counted two new Bugattis at the show. So there were some new cars, but it's mostly older classic cars. Yes.
Were there for sale signs on some of them, as they usually are?
I did not see any for sale signs on any of them.
Is there an implicit? Sure. You know, it's like okay, you could ask the person if they're selling.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. If they're not already publicly offering it.
It is a fascinating world. It's a little like the art world. I mean, I was hovering around one or two cars where people came up and they saw the car and they kind of looked at it and then saw the chassis number of the car and then knew all about that car and who owned it and where it had been and, you know, pretty much traced back its history. So it's obviously a very small world, even though there were a lot of people. The people in the know are there.
Just
a select group. and a lucky few, I'd say, yes.
Yeah, I find these shows very intriguing. I have recently been to two within 30 days of each other. One was at Waveney Park in New Canaan, a large park next to New Canaan High School, which was, I think it was two Sundays ago. Maybe it was three, I can't remember, time goes by, and there were just hundreds of vehicles, but they were intermingled in the main parking. If they got there early enough, it opened at 8:30 in the morning. There was a very wide assortment. I think I've sort of touched on this on an earlier show, but that had followed up the one that was in New Canaan and took up many of the streets of the center of New Canaan 3 weeks earlier. Probably some of the same vehicles were overlapping in the two shows. All the same people. As you say, Jay, there are car guys that you just, you know, that's where they all are on these shows. And they know all about the vehicles that we were walking around in between looking at. But what I came away with is that these cars are only going to become, I mean, they're in pristine condition for the most part. There were a few that were just basically, they had mud on them, they, you know, SUV types that looked like they'd gone through a mud hole and hadn't been touched up. But the exotics were certainly all shined to within an inch of their life, probably, you know, and looking wonderfully. And then there are the usual people. Then people start to leave early in these shows that their owners, and they like to rev their cars up as they're creeping through the hordes of people that are filling the alleys and the streets where they're parked, and get attention as they are
people love
moving
it.
Onward to their next day's event. But I think we're going to see cars, fossil fuel cars. You know, we've been talking a lot about electric cars on this show, and we are coming of a new era and age in vehicles. By 2050, the majority of new vehicles may not be fossil fueled anymore. But
Correct. Boy, those of us
who've got the fossil fuel vehicles are going to just covet what we have, and drive. I hope we're going to drive them more than some of those vehicles looked like they weren't driven. But don't you think we're going to see fossil fueled vehicles on the roads for a long, long time, well after electric cars have taken over the new car departments?
No.
I have a question.
No,
Robin,
you don't.
Maybe you've never seen these pictures, but I was fascinated. Have you seen those double decker electro buses from 1913?
Probably, no, but I wouldn't remember because I haven't seen anything like that recently.
No,
but there were a lot of electric cars back then.
Totally, flying cars, the whole nine yards. I mean, cars
But it wasn't. I don't know that it was because of energy and all gasoline and that kind of thing, but they sure were around, and I don't know what the ranges were on them, but they certainly weren't what we want today in order to buy and drive the electric cars more than 200 miles a day sometimes.
Robin, astonishingly, from what I can find out, ranges were not an issue.
While you were talking, I just Googled quickly because I thought I remembered this correctly. In 1913, the first car to go past 100 kilometers per hour in speed, so that's 62 miles an hour, was, and I remembered the car, but I didn't remember, it was a Belgian electric vehicle. and it was called the Jamais Contente, which means never happy for whatever reason. And it just looks like a cigar, but it was. So in 1913, the fastest car on the planet was an electric vehicle. So for sure, yeah. They've been around for some time.
Yeah, and it was just amazing is how they went away. And now here we are sort of, I mean, I don't want
to returning to the electric era.
But I don't want to mock the car that you had to crank. But basically, we went from, wow, this can fly, to, oh, here's what you can do. Bunga, bunga, bunga. And here we are, 100 plus years later. And
while you were talking about that range wasn't an issue back then. Range wasn't an issue back then because, first of all, you didn't go anywhere back then. You didn't travel across the country in vehicles back then, most likely. I wasn't there, so I don't know that was the case. But certainly we didn't have the road systems we have and the travel between cities that in some cases is, you know, a couple hundred miles. For those electric vehicles of those eras, having to go very far in comparison. And I don't know how they charged them back then. I suppose similarly to the way the new ones are being done. But it would have been fun to see those cars running around.
Do you have a minute?
I don't think there were any electric vehicles in any of the shows, the two shows I went to in Lower Connecticut, and I don't know that Jay saw any or not.
Actually, this is what I wanted to say. There actually wasn't. Does anybody remember Bollinger Motors?
I do, yes.
Okay, so kind of it was like, huh, they're still around? And Bollinger Motors was there with two vehicles. So they were, if we remember, only just a few years ago, hot in the news, they were the upcoming electric SUV company. And I thought they had totally gone away, but they were there officially represented with two vehicles that looked very much like the original Land Rover Defender. And very tough-looking vehicle, bigger in size. Not as big as an original Humvee, but certainly bigger than a Land Rover Defender.
Well, for those listeners who are listening to this show, if you want to go to these events, they are annual, I think. At least the two I go to are annual. And we don't know whether they're going to keep going the way they are. There was such a large group of cars in the middle of New Canaan that there was some discussion going on about whether they were going to be able to continue to use New Canaan, the town, the center of the town of New Canaan, and the roads around it for future shows, because these shows seem to grow every year, not just in the people that come to look at the cars, but the people who have the cars and bring them out to display them and maybe want to sell them and hope that might happen. But it is a feast for car lovers, there's no question about it. Can we move on, Jay?
Sure.
You had an assortment of topics to go. You may want to continue, and then I've got a couple things too. So let's go on.
Well, speaking of, and I think we mentioned that last week already, to go to and back from the show, I was obviously traveling on the roads, and I think we've commented on that on the air and off the air. There is increasingly more traffic on the roads. It used to be, you could go, you know, to the city or anywhere around the city, and pick a time of day, or go on Saturdays and there was less traffic. Those days right now are just not
gone.
I mean, there is traffic congestion consistently all day, every day. And that brings me to safety on the roads and The more people on the roads, the more you're likely to find idiots on the roads. And I know I use the term loosely, but my point in safety here when traveling in dense traffic is just don't trust anyone. Don't assume they're going to make a move. Don't assume they're not going to switch lanes. Don't assume they're going to come to a stop at a stop sign.
Let me jump in because I ran into two cases where people had the signal lights on one direction, they went another.
Yeah.
Just don't assume that any turn signals or lights that people use to do something with the car are going to mean that the owners are going to go the direction that you think they're going to go. It is really dangerous to when you see somebody who puts a right signal on to turn off the road into a driveway, and you think, oh, I can get by this person I've been creeping behind for 700 feet, and then they swing left and want to go into across the road. It's frightening.
And do we have any, even though this isn't technically safety tip time, there is a generic, it's pretty interesting, and there is no question but that traffic...
What is it? What are you getting at?
People are asleep. They're not paying any... The actual drivers don't seem to be awake.
Well, okay, so
And I'm
ahead,
not
Jay.
Being literal. Go on.
Here's my argument, and Robin's getting ready to leap here. I've been watching. Remember, we talked off the air last week about Tesla cameras. Never had the chance to talk about them on the air.
Yeah.
So I've reviewed a few YouTube videos of Tesla cams, and there are channels just full of them. And basically, the autopilot, Tesla's autopilot, seems to work in a lot of cases. And in some cases, it does not. However, in a lot of cases, it just, either stomped on the brakes or did something that triggered the driver to, quote-unquote, wake up and take evasive action. So even if the system didn't, per se, make the evasive action, there's numerous videos where you see, and you watch the video, and you see that the driver really got his or her attention awakened by the fact that the car was doing something.
Yeah, so, and Tesla has upgraded these systems in a very low-key fashion over the last few weeks. So the systems are probably running better than they might have been. We were noting about the accidents that Texas were running into, mostly safety vehicles. And I claim... My theory was that their systems, camera or otherwise, were blinded by the strobe lights that are flashing on the tops of these cars. They are in their own way dangerous. Besides telling you something's going on, because they are incredibly bright, they're a nuisance, and they might well have blinded the Tesla situation. But nobody said that yet. But let's get back to self-driving for a minute, because as I said in the show, I was driving in. Audi A5 Sport, which turned out to have lane keeping features, self-driving capability in a very loose way, and I mean loose because it did not operate well on what I will call our Northwest Connecticut road systems that I was on between the dealership and my residence while I was having this car as a loaner. And when I realized that they had it, I didn't realize it was in the car in the beginning. And then somehow it must have turned itself on. And I started feeling a vibration in the steering wheel occasionally. And I knew what that was because I felt it in other vehicles. And then I started to play with it. And I went around some curves fairly well without my hands needing to assist the steering of the car. But I found very often that after two times trying to stay within a lane on a very gentle curve, not a sharp curve, but a gentle curve, it did not on the third occasion of hitting a third gentle curve work, and a gong came on and said, please put your hands on the wheel and take over the steering. And I could not figure out for the life of me why it worked in two instances and not in a third instance in the same road system that I was driving along the way. So I don't know what I know. Tesla's program is much more accurate and promotes the concept of really being able to leave your hands off the wheel for a while. The Audi system, which was actually dangerous in my view, because if you really thought you could leave your hands off the wheel in this car, you could not leave your hands off the wheel in the car. And I came away thinking, why would anybody want to leave their hands off the wheel in a car, Jay? You're you like these concepts, so why would you want to just take your hands off the wheel and allow the car to drive itself? I'm waiting.
Oftentimes the system does a better job than most drivers, for one.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it replaces a driver. I think you should have your hands on the wheel. Those systems, and we've talked about this a lot, obviously, these systems are evolving rapidly.
Yes,
and,
they are.
Just to mention, again, Tesla and their camera-based system, there are cameras. I don't know how many cameras there are on the Tesla. I don't know if it's 6 or 8, but there are cameras from every different angle. People can retrieve the information. One last thing. There is no privacy on the road if you have Teslas around you, because all that data is used by Tesla to improve their system, which is pretty phenomenal use of data or compiling data and using it. But it also gives everybody the opportunity to review those videos or use them. In those Tesla cams I was watching, people were just forwarding footage to police officials just to for incidents that had nothing to do with
them. I want to jump in. I see the time's running out. A European country, and I can't remember which one, has just decoded the whole Tesla system and found out exactly what is being recorded. And you are correct about a lot of stuff's being recorded. But they've broken down the code. I guess they reverse-engineered it, and it'll make it easier to find out what's going on with maybe all these problems, the problem ones that Tesla's having. But I want to go to cruise controls. There are two kinds of cruise controls now on most of the new cars, and they are all designed to theoretically keep you at your cruise control set speed, whether you're going uphill, downhill, or on a straight. In other words, you cannot coast downhill easily with some of the cruise controls because they are active ones that actually activate the brakes. The European cars have these systems versus some of the American cars like the Jeep Cherokees, which have, let's downshift the transmission and we'll get the car to slow down that way. And let me tell you, the ones that do not use active systems with use of brakes do not do a whole lot of good job in slowing down a vehicle or keeping this vehicle at the assigned cruise speed when going down steep hills. They make the transmissions downshift, and with 9 speeds or 8 speeds or 7 speeds, the ratios are not strong enough in the lower gears to actually slow down vehicles if they don't have active braking systems. That's that on that.
Okay.
So
what are we supposed to do with that information? All right.
Well, anybody who's knowledgeable about you and uses cruise control a lot like I do would find this out
if
they wanted to.
Don't believe in autopilot.
Maintained speed. I actually like to accelerate, let the car accelerate going down a hill because there's usually a flat at the end in which I can continue to roll along at a slightly or maybe more than slightly faster speed that I started out on. But as it is, the safetiness of keeping the speed at the assigned or set speed is probably the safer way to go.
We can revisit this.
I would keep it for next week.
My eyes peeled on the new Range Rover coming out.
All right, we can definitely do that. And let's compare and control. Let's look into these things more. Precisely.
We shall.
As it happens.
Okay.
All right. Do you have a 1 minute safety tip, Jay?
I think we covered that. I mean, it's back to, and I don't want to repeat myself more than I need to, but, you know, keep your eyes peeled. Don't trust anybody. Situational awareness in traffic. Know all the cars around you. When you don't see one in your peripheral vision, that means that car is in your blind spot. And beware.
And boy, the blind spots are big, even though you think you've only got a six inch wide pillar between the front seat windows and the back seat windows. You can lose a whole tractor trailer in that 6 inch or 5 inch or whatever it is blind spot.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarcus. This is Car Geeks. Baby, you can drive my-